counting stats, or shoot, it can be about the counting stats, but those counting stats should be steals, rebounds, and blocks more so than
Kendrick had plenty of counting stats.
Yeah, right. Well, you need that. They're best teams, the best teams he's had. You had the big two and the guys who fell in around them. I mean, it was Kendrick Davis, DeAndre Williams, and the guys who fell in around them. And then last year, it was Kendrick Davis and last year it was P.J. Haggerty and Dane Dajia. Yeah. And then two years before that, it was
Kendrick
Davis.
Tyrese was kind of a dog.
He was a dog. He was everything, right? Like, he was the jack of all trades, combo guard, good defender, veteran leader, been through the fires, willing to do the dirty work. Like, those guys are hard to find.
Yeah.
And
they're probably more expensive now. The last thing I would say is, I don't think it's going to be an apples-to-apples comparison because the eras are so different. I do wonder, though, like, everything I keep hearing about Fred Smith is, like, is Fred Smith going to be the Tony Harris of it all? Like, in the end, like, what's really the first sign that's, like, it was over for Larry? It's losing Tony Harris to Tennessee. It's, like, if they don't hold on to Fred Smith, is, like, does that become... I think the de-emphasis of high school recruiting makes it a completely different era. But, like, every time I hear everyone talk about Fred Smith, I just keep I keep thinking about that.
Yeah, well, you know, Penny's shown the ability to adapt because it was all high school recruiting in the early years, and then he adapted to go all portal. And we know, though, that the mix is it needs to be a mix. It's got to be a little bit of both. It got to be a little bit of portal, a little bit of freshman development. You got to have that nucleus of continuity. That is the mix. It's just so hard to get it when you feel like you're whiffing on it, like this year. Like, so, but I would say, like, even if, again, Thedford, could it be Givens? Maybe Ashton, right, comes back and plays a role. I'm not saying that any of these three guys are your star players next year, but they could fall in around the
help
the,
you
the
build an identity.
That you do get. Yeah, right. So you got to go out and get that. Like, in some ways, Sincere Parker was a bucket getter, but, like, he didn't do enough else. He couldn't really be the focal point of a team.
Yeah.
And so that was a problem. So, like, with Sincere and with Doug, there was too much, and think about Hassan Abdul-Hakim and where he came from in terms of being the leading scorer for UT Rio Grande Valley. Like, you know, you do have a lot of guys on this year's roster who needed the ball. You need a roster next year where there's fewer guys that need the ball, right? Because you got to be able to be in a situation on a team where, all right, I'm not getting a 15 shots a game. Like, I can still impact winning in a number of ways. And I just don't think they had enough of that this year, because it's guys who were talented, guys who have the ability to make shots, but you put a bunch of guys like that on the floor whose only role in their careers has really only ever been shot maker, shot creator, initiator. There's only one basketball, right? So it doesn't mean that this team lacked talent. That was never the problem. And I thought Penny's quote on that we played earlier was pretty good. Like, there were actually good players on this team. They just didn't fit right. They didn't fit right. And a GM can help with that.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get into the list. We mentioned that Miami of Ohio goes down. What is the impact of that on the tournament? There's nobody I trust more that talking about bracketologists than David Cobb. We'll talk about that and more from the world of sports when we come back. Jason Smith also coming up later this hour. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. The program is brought to you by our good friends over at Leaders Credit Union. Leaders Credit Union is federally insured by the NCUA, and it's a not-for-profit financial institution fully owned by its members and operating for their benefit. They're one of the most stable credit unions in the nation. Leaders exists to serve the needs of its members and lead the way on their behalf. Leaders was awarded in the top 10% of healthiest credit unions nationwide by depositaccounts.com, and they were listed in the top 100 credit unions in the nation by S&P Global. They also have full-service banking, including checking and savings accounts, loans, mortgages, credit cards, and state-of-the-art technology to help you move forward. They've even created a special webpage for our listeners. Visit leaderscu.com/ESPN to learn how they can champion your financial story and even waive your membership free. 10 branches across West Tennessee and a full-service call center to assist you wherever you are. They also have locations in Bartlett and Arlington, as well as access to 85,000 fee-free ATMs all over the nation and 5,000 shared branches worldwide that can serve as your leader branch. So you can take leaders with you wherever you go. They also have a fantastic mobile app, making it simple to review accounts and balances, make payments, and achieve your financial goals. Managing your money has never been more convenient, and it's available 24/7. So one more time, visit that special webpage for our listeners, leaderscu.com/ESPN. Jason Smith's going to join us here in about 20 minutes. Before we do that, let's get into the list. Championship week. Is that what we still call it?
Yeah, why not?
I just never know. I feel like... And also, it's like, was last week championship week? Like, we don't even do rivalry week anymore.
We have two championship weeks.
Yeah, so we didn't have it. Okay, so the big news of the day is that Miami of Ohio loses in their first, it's the quarter, they started out, they only invite eight teams in the MAC. So they lose to Frank Martin and UMass. And by the way, if you've not gotten a look at Frank Martin these days, my man is making sure he brings Miami to Amherst. No, where is UMass Amherst, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah. My guy still, like, he had that, I don't know if it was spray tan. I just don't know if he's always just going to hit in the tanning, but he looked phenomenal. He had that thing where he's wearing a red sport coat, and it, like, matched the color of his face.
Well, the fact that they won a game means he won't be able to begin his South Florida vacation, you know, for another day.
Correct. Go see the family.
Exactly. It's funny, you mentioned Miami. He beat Miami, but you were talking about Miami, South Florida.
Correct.
You know, it's funny. You know, we got to start referring to Miami, Ohio. Now we got to start referring to Miami, Florida. Like when we're talking, because Miami of Ohio has become such a story now that it's like, whoa. You know, we always called Miami of Ohio, Miami of Ohio. Now we got to start calling Miami, Florida, Miami, Florida, so everybody knows who we're talking about.
It is funny how we have to say it's Miami of Ohio, but when we say Miami, we mean Miami, Florida. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we don't say Miami of Florida.
Miami of Florida. Miami of Florida made the playoff in college football this year. Good for them. No, it's like, you know, what would be the circumstances to where we would have to differentiate between Memphis, Tennessee and Memphis, Egypt? You know, like, we don't have to say Memphis of Tennessee. It's pretty well understood who we're talking about.
It's always just based on, I would say most Americans, if you heard Memphis, you're not going to Egypt.
Well, I don't even, is Memphis, Egypt even like a real place anymore? Or was it just like a historic place?
It still exists. I don't, it's obviously not as, I mean, we're named after them because Memphis was what was considered the capital of the Delta of the Nile. And as if the Nile is the, or if the Mississippi is the Nile of America, like that was the inspiration for the name.
You know, what's crazy is I had never actually put that together. Like in you, like, that was an aha moment for me just now when you said that.
Well, it took me until I was about 23 or 24 to realize Flo Rida was just Florida.
Whoa.
Yeah, that was a tough scene when that one clicked for me. It's like, I did not get that at all.
That's another one. It's like, wow. So simple, but so obvious.
Let's see the other big stories. So I've got my resident. No one studies bracketology quite like Cobb. So we had Stanford. You had a couple of great graphics on the Everything app. The bubble bursting graphic that Cobb tweets out for teams is tremendous. He even doubled up. So Stanford had their bubble burst, and then Virginia Tech later that evening, and then he did double bubble bursting. So, Auburn wins yesterday over Mississippi State. SMU won their first game against Syracuse and loses yesterday. That was a four-point game.
Against Louisville.
Louisville, right? Yeah, I was trying to... There were so many... Like, this is like the classic, I'm not in tourney shape. Like, I was like, hey, it was a red team. And I was like, it definitely was a Texas. So, where are we in terms of the bubble? Because... we'll now obviously have lots of annoying discussion. If you haven't had enough annoying discussion about Miami of Ohio, that will keep going because, I mean, when you look at the actual field, they're probably getting in.
Yeah, they are. They are almost certainly getting in. It's like Memphis a year ago. It really is. Now, of course, the difference is Memphis had those quad one wins. But if you just talk about the metrics that the committee looks at.
Yeah.
If you looked at KenPom last year, and you were trying to select a field based off teams' KenPom rankings, Memphis would not have made the NCAA tournament. Well, they got a 5 seed. Well, so how does that make sense, right? It's because they don't select based on the predictive metrics. They don't look at KenPom to decide who they're letting in unless it gets down to the cut line, and they can use it as a differentiating factor for those 10 and 11 seeds that don't have a resume. Well, Memphis had a resume last year. You say, well, Miami of Ohio doesn't have a resume. Well, yeah, they do have a resume. They have 31 wins. 3 of those are non-Division I. So for the purposes of the committee. Selection committee, they have 28 wins. And the wins above bubble metric, it's the one you got to know. I know ESPN only shows net. I know, you know, a lot of these networks are only showing you net. Net is not it. Like when I was in the mock selection and exercise in Indy last month, we never talked about net. Net is still useful. It's for categorizing your opponents. That's all it's really used for. It determines how difficult you are to beat. So Miami of Ohio doesn't have a great net because, to be quite honest, they're not that difficult to beat, as we just saw. And as we've seen for a month now with them playing all these close games, but that wins above bubble, it's not about your KenPom. It's not about your margin of victory. It's not about any of that stuff that was kind of killing Memphis last year. It's about getting rewarded for winning games. And make no mistake, man, Miami of Ohio, they don't get big rewards for their victories. Like, their victories are worth very little, like pennies on the dollar compared to what you get for a victory in the SEC or the Big Ten. But if you stack 31 of them in a row, those incremental gains add up. And so in this wins above bubble, they're firmly top 40, right? So they're going to wake up tomorrow, probably 38, 39 in wins above bubble. And that's still at large territory. And people want to look at KenPom, and I get it, but like,
well,
that tells you if they're a good team.
Let me pause right there, because while the Tigers' metrics last year, the predictives, whether it be Torvik, whether it be KenPom, did not like them, but they were like, I think they were like top 10 in wins above bubble.
They were top 15 in some of the selection metrics, and that's how they ended up as a 5 seed. And that's why Miami's going to make the tournament. It's why they're going to be in, and people aren't going to like it. And, hey, look, I'm all about – I don't care who they're playing in the first round. You could probably fade Miami of Ohio, right? Because once that line drops on whatever that game is, be it an 11-6 or, you know, whatever the situation is, the general public is going to see them open as a 15.5-point underdog and be like, yo, that team won 30 games. I'm going to go – bet for them to cover that spread. But, you know, that's where you can look at the predictive metrics and you can say, well, they're actually not that great of a team, and they're probably going to lose that game by 20 plus, you know. So when it comes to getting in the field, the predictive metrics don't really have that big of an impact. But when it comes to, you know, the way you want to bet, sure, by all means, fade the crap out of Miami of Ohio, but don't think for a second that means they're not getting into the tournament.
Well, I was curious to ask you about this when you did your mock selection, because obviously when y'all did it, was that 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago? Time stands still.
Yeah.
Did they explain to you, because y'all are obviously mocking it out with whatever, 3 weeks to go in the season, was there a category for how to treat conference tournament games?
That was a big point of discussion. There's obviously the narrative about conference tournament championship games not mattering, and this idea that what happens in a championship game on Saturday and particularly on Sunday not having an impact.
It definitely seems to me like I'm not convinced that the Big Ten and SEC championship games matter unless you had a situation where a team is basically either win or get in, or maybe win or go to date, or lose and go to date, and like that seems to be the only way it matters.
Yeah, right. Like, you're not alone in thinking that. Now, we were told and assured they reiterated it and hammered it home that no, these championship games matter. And we've got, in some cases, 14, 15, 16 contingency brackets out there for accounting for the results on Sunday. But what happens is you don't go back to the drawing board on Sunday and reevaluate holistically where everybody stands in the metrics after those championship games. You're just looking at isolated results and making a couple of little changes. So that's where I think that's where it gets wonky, is like, you don't look at the whole picture on Sunday again. You just look at the contingencies of what happens in these couple of games. And therefore, it can end up looking a little off, I think, because if you're not going all the way back to the drawing board and starting from scratch, then some teams could get in positions in the final bracket where it doesn't feel like what happened on Sunday, you know, really factored in to the extent it should. So, yeah, that's they say it matters, but like their emphasis too is that what happens in a conference tournament doesn't matter more, doesn't matter less than what happens in November in a ballroom in the Caribbean, you know. So it still matters. Like, the bubble is so finicky right now that these next couple of days are going to be huge on the bubble. But is it going to make a huge impact on the number 3, number 4, number 5, number 6 seeds? Probably not. That stuff is pretty much set at this point.
Okay, so the games that would have applied today, NC State falls to UVA. It does feel like, though, NC State still right side of the bubble.
Yeah, they're interesting because you start peeling back the layers. NC State doesn't really hold up. Now, their metrics are still pretty solid.
In fairness, didn't Will Wade basically say as much? Like, I think he basically said, it's like, you know, you look at our metrics, it's a tournament team. But he kind of was implying,
watch us play.
We don't pass the eye test.
No, they do not. I mean, they've lost now 7 of 8. Going into the NCAA tournament, Selection Sunday, that's not where you're going to be. And the crazy thing, too, is like, all right, they won at Clemson. We thought that was a good win, but Clemson then started to slide. They won at SMU. Well, now all of a sudden, because the MAC's probably going to be a two-bid league, we have SMU as the first team out right now. So, you know, that looked like a good win when you got it, but now it doesn't. It's not aging very well.
Cobb, so listen, they're running into the SEC football problem.
Yeah, the ACC is killing itself.
Just, they, you know, listen, man, like, you just going to all these places and winning, it's tough.
Yeah, the ACC might very well end up as a 7-bid league when it looked like 3 days ago it would be a 9-bid league. So still better than last year, but not great.
All right, so Indiana loses last night. They felt like they were, I don't even know if you would say good side or bad side. It felt like you could make a coin flip argument for them, but it felt like with Miami losing today, Indiana could be one of those losers.
Absolutely. I think the Miami loss and the fact that we're now probably going to have two MAC teams, I think that's it for Indiana. They got to decide, do they want to go play in the NIT? But my gosh, I've never seen a less athletic, worse rebounding team that was actually in the conversation. I mean, that team, Indiana does not deserve to be in the tournament.
I never looked this up. How many power conference teams played in the NIT last year?
Seems like the appetite to do it is dwindling, well, but they're trying to give deference to them. They're trying to make it to where more of them get in.
Here's my educated theory. The power league teams don't want to do it, not because, like, oh, whatever. It's nobody wants to keep paying guys.
Yeah, keep paying them, and then you got to, I mean, the players, what's your motivation? If you've got eligibility remaining, you're looking into the portal maybe. Like, why would you run out the string on an NIT appearance? Like, the,
all right, so SMU, I got it right here. SMU, Oklahoma State, Georgia Tech, and Stanford. So 4 of the, what is it, 32 now?
That's it from last year.
Here is who declined bids: Arizona State, Butler, Cincinnati, Colorado, DePaul, Georgetown, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas State, Nebraska, Northwestern, Ohio State, Penn State, Rutgers, TCU, UCF, USC, Utah, Villanova, West Virginia. Those, I think, declined to go play in the whatever. What was the crown?
Yeah, we have the crown now. The CBI said today there's no tournament.
Correct,
this year,
no CBI. So we got to expand the CBI. Other teams declining were Boise State, Florida State, LSU, Minnesota, Nevada, Pittsburgh, Providence, Seton Hall, South Carolina, UNLV, Wake, and Washington.
It's kind of like college basketball's problem, like version of the college football bowl problem. Like, all right, if you don't make the playoff, what's your motivation to go play in a bowl game? Maybe if you're a G5, like, it still means something, especially if you haven't done something in, you know, been in a bowl in a while. And it's the same deal with like the NIT. If you're a a mid-major program that won your league and then lost in your conference tournament, maybe you want to keep playing. Like, maybe you won 23, 24 games. Maybe you have some guys who are seniors or not looking to jump or whatever the case. And like, hey, winning an NIT would actually be a really nice achievement for your program. But like, if you're a high major school, you're getting left out of the big dance. Like, everybody's just ready to move on. You know, I mean, like, what are we doing?
I mean, your NIT Final Four last year was North Texas, UC Irvine, Loyola Chicago, and Chattanooga. And
yeah, and honestly, that's more compelling than a
Irvine was the only one seed that got through.
But I'd rather those teams get their moment in the spotlight than.
But obviously, ESPN doesn't want that.
No, but those were actually good games.
No, the final went to overtime, and then Irvine, North Texas, was a 2-point game, and then Chattanooga, Loyola Chicago got away late, but it was a 7-point game. They were all competitive games. All right. Anything else bubbly? So right now, does Kentucky-Missouri matter at all?
There's a slim chance, and I mean slim.
Because it's getting close. It looked like Kentucky was in pretty good control, and now Missouri has cut it to 3.
So if the Mountain West ends up as a multi-bid league, and if the Atlantic 10 ends up as a multi-bid league, there's a chance, slim, very slim, that Missouri could get up, you know, end up on the wrong side of the bubble. I don't think it's going to happen. They do have a lot of good wins. They beat Kentucky, they beat Florida, they beat Tennessee, right? But Missouri played such a horrible non-conference schedule that they're kind of lagging in some of the metrics. I think they're safe, but
Missouri's in better shape than OU, right? OU is in better shape than Missouri, right? Because of the non-con.
No, Missouri's in better shape than OU. Missouri's in better shape than Texas. The team I'm worried about from the SEC right now is Texas. They lost to Chris Beard last night, which was low-key hilarious. I asked Chris Beard in the post-game press conference last night because he was complimentary of Texas on a couple of occasions in that. In fact, his opening statement was about a good win for us. You know, I think Texas is an NCAA tournament team, yada, yada. And it's just funny, right? Because it's Chris Beard talking about Texas. And he was effusive in his insistence that, hey, that's a tournament team. So I was like, all right, you've seen this team twice now. Like, what makes you confident that Texas is a tournament team? And, he gave a good answer. Like, it's just a weird dynamic, though, that Texas, like, their NCAA tournament hopes were imperiled in a fairly significant way by Chris Beard last night. It was poetic. But I am worried. I am worried now with the MAC as a two-bid league and with some of these other potential outcomes that Texas might be – they might be on the chopping block. I think they're probably looking at going to Dayton. I think that's where they're going to end up.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Hopefully they put them on Wednesday. I don't want to have to, like – I want to sit down and watch the WBC final with sound.
That WBC's actually been really good.
The annoying it's been
thing
awesome.
About this time of the calendar is like I have to be so dialed in on college basketball, but I miss the World Baseball Classic. I don't get to watch the Players Championship. Like first world problems for sure. But this is actually like a low key awesome sports week.
No, I mean it's a great get you to next week, which is obviously just the absolute best.
Absolute best.
Anything else bubble-wise that you want to mention before we take a break and get to Jason?
Just look out for Florida State. If the Noles take down Duke, just saying.
Did you see the video of the staffers that are responsible for the thumbs up, thumbs down on the replay? They had an electric handshake after they got... Like, they got it right, and, like, everybody's fist bumping them. Ugh. Watch out, Duke.
Yeah, that's one more thing to add to Penny's list for next year. Get a clutch video review team on your staff there.
Well, that's kind of the other thing. It's like, Penny always is so far away from the bench. Like, I feel like 80% of the game, Penny's like, and maybe it's because he's got a bad back, which I could relate to. But it's like, I feel like he's always just like, hanging out on the table, like the scores table. Like he's just kind of like leaned up like that. He's not really like not close to the video guys.
He should get a stool. I know Stephen Pearl has a stool, and he's probably not even 40. So I'm like, you know, hey, get a stool like Ron Hunter.
Ron Hunter,
or like Derek Dooley.
Derek, that was just all, walking down the crutches at Vanderbilt. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Jason Smith joins the program. We'll get his thoughts on what he wants to say about Tiger basketball and more. We'll do that next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Start your day right here on 92.9 FM, ESPN, from 9 until noon with the J&J Show, the co-host of that program, Jason Smith, who you can follow on Twitter on X at JasonSmith929, joins us now. Jason, did you get a listen to Penny's postgame?
Yeah, did get a chance to listen and was I suppose, you know, Penny was ready to be asked about a GM and plans for the future. It seemed like he was a little bit more open about that, certainly than he had been, and that part I expected. You did have a team to coach previous to the loss to Tulane, obviously, to open this tournament. But, you know, the fact that he jumped right in and said, yes, a GM could help me build the roster, that he was ready to jump in so soon did surprise me, I guess, a little bit. But, you know, folks have been waiting on those sort of answers for a long time. So maybe I shouldn't have been surprised that he was so ready to sort of talk about what was next. And that was obviously indicative of a man who believes he's going to be back and is the man to fix it. But, you know, he said in there a number of times, what was the way he phrased it, 1A, 1B, get with Ed, got to talk to Ed. So in terms of stepping forward and what changes will be made, I didn't get the sense that it was whether or not he would be back. Yeah, I got the sense that it was what kind of staff changes, whether
who else would be back.
Exactly. So that's where we're at. That's certainly what I've made of those comments. As far as the game, it's what you said, Jeffrey. There's very few things to take from that. Aside from the fact that, again, and I think this speaks again to a lack of seriousness, not just in terms of from the players, but in terms of from the coaching staff. You guys talked about it being down 1-0 to start that game because you can't get the starting lineup in on time. You know, it was just a microcosm of what this season was like. And again, it was in a way good that you were putting an end to it and we could finally start to get to some sort of resolution in terms of what the fixes are going to be.
I know CJ is playing youth basketball and you've seen your fair share of high school and youth basketball games yourself. I can remember one time I was responsible for the book for my brother's basketball team, and I screwed, like, somebody had a different number with, like, a blue and a white jersey, and I wrote down the number wrong, so pregame when that guy came out, like, it was a tech, and it was 2-0. I cannot remember seeing a college basketball game start 1-0 with a procedural tech.
Never. And you know, I've always been scared of doing the book. You know, I was one of those parents been asked a couple times when somebody hadn't shown up, and I really haven't been that guy that's willing to step up for the team like that. I'd rather be the guy on the outside criticizing like I typically do from the show, you know, and that's I've chosen that role. And you might say, listen, man, you're not biting as much off the apple as you should. But at this point in my life, I do find it's easier to observe than to be the guy holding the book. That said, you got to get that damn thing in on time.
I told George, like, because, you know, like ESPN, news, like came into the game and like they're getting ready to tip it off, and I see 1-0. I was like, well, that can't be right. And nope. Right. It was.
And here's the thing. I mean, if we're, you know, and you have. You know, I don't know. I haven't counted the number, but I know it's you see it every time behind Penny there. It's not just, you know, Mike Davis and Jermaine. I mean, they've got a staff of what feels like a dozen guys. And so you have bodies to be able to get it done. It's almost seems like they've got a coach to match player for player just in terms of how large that staff is. When you just, again, whether it was getting Doug to miss the free throw, somebody call it out, get Penny to call it out, or getting the lineup in on time, it's what's required is a top to bottom look at yourself in the mirror in terms of as a program. And obviously that starts with Penny and entirely, I don't know, you know, Penny talked about paying more attention to the small details that's, you know, coming off a 5 seed, you lose, you know, it was the small things that can get you to the next level. It felt like, well, these clearly large changes are required. And so, going to be real interested to see how quickly Ed Scott talks. You know, that, I mean, again, he waited, and some defended that decision in the sense that what's there to say until there's a decision made? Well, it seems pretty clear that Memphis is not in a position where it can necessarily, I mean, perhaps they'll surprise us, but where you can afford to fire a women's basketball coach with a $1 million buyout and a men's basketball coach, who, by the way, is a program hero, for $6.15 million. And then, as you continue to point out, the cost of replacing both of those staffs. And so if you're in that position where it's pretty obvious as a G6 school that's focusing clearly on football at a time that it should be, if it's obvious that you can't do that, then the statement to your fan base, because Penny's now said it, Penny's come out and, you know, pretty much answered these questions about his future after each and every loss. It's time for Ed Scott to make that statement. And I don't see any reason, Jeffrey, for this to go, you know, through the weekend and everything else. The season is over. There is something to say now, and what you say is what you're going to do to fix it. And, you know, it sort of had been when Ed and Tim come in, Tim Duncan, obviously Tim's Penny's former teammate, hey, we're going to work with Penny and give him everything he needs, right, to get him to the next level. And they obviously had that great season. It went well. It feels like at this point, obviously, Ed's got to and Ed was a guy who was, I'm sure, asked about, well, what would happen if it went bad with Penny Hardaway before he got the job when he was being interviewed for it. You're in a position now where it's gotten ugly, and Ed's probably, he clearly is in a position now where he's got to, you know, pull the reins. He's got to take some control here. So what that looks like, is it literally replacing every guy on Penny's staff, because he's close with some of those guys? You know, are you taking that kind of power from him in terms of hiring this new staff? Are you still working hand in hand like you were when you came in with the job? You know, what's that look like? That percentage of Ed hires, that percentage of Penny hires, what's this GM, if that's the way they're going to go, look like? You know, all that is going to be so critical. And you figure, here's the thing, Jeffrey, it's got to happen quickly. Because, again, while this, you know, this transfer portal is about to open, we've talked about the need to really have that homework already being done, or at least starting. You want to get those guys in place and get them in place quickly. So I say all that to say, hey, I mean, I'm expecting, to be honest with you, I'd be shocked if we go through the weekend and we've heard nothing. Get the statement out. Maybe you do have a presser if there's more to say, but get the statement out in terms of what you're going to do to fix it. And the fixing's got to start soon. This isn't something you can wait until the offseason to do. Nobody knows that better than you guys.
So what do you think the dynamics are, Jason, of that discussion, hypothetically, between Ed Scott and Penny Hardaway? Because we walked through that in the first segment, and it could get interesting, right? Like, if you go into a meeting with Penny Hardaway with a bunch of ultimatums, but if you don't have the ability to actually follow through, if Penny puts up resistance because you can't sign a $6 million check, then what leverage do you have to actually force the changes that you want to see in the program?
Well, the only leverage you have is how ugly it's gotten. And I think that's part of why it's pointing out the $1.2 million shortfall, basically saying it's the only program that failed us in that way. And you obviously have a women's program that's failing on the floor, but Ed didn't single that program out. And so you've pointed out, I mean, if any leverage, to your point, because you don't have the greatest level of it when you don't have the 6.15 to buy him out, but the leverage he's got is this ugly season and how badly it's gone in terms of the roster itself. So you asked me, how do I envision it? I imagine him and Ed are looking, whether it's player, whether it's assistant coach, any staff member, and you're looking to cut fat first, right? If I'm Ed Scott, I'm going through this thing like an accountant, because coming in, and especially with the way Penny performed after you did immediately with his best season, you're going to give Penny the benefit of the doubt. There is no more of that now after a season like that, Kyle. That part's obvious, and you have that kind of leverage. So you're going down the rows. You're going, you gave this guy what? Look what he did. Let's look what he did. You gave this guy what? Let's look what he did. Then you use that to boil it down player-wise to what's feasible in terms of returning. And then obviously part of that, and this will be the GM's job if they're bringing it in, but Ed Scott's got to have eyes on this. You now have to dig in. And so you're doing that with Penny, showing him, I suppose, together, I would do this, the return on investment for each, and we're cutting out the fat. That's the immediate part, whether that's staff members, whether it's the part of the roster that you're not going to bring back. That's how it's got to start. Again, assuming that there is no, hey, Penny, I got a $6.15 million bag and you got to step away here. And that's, of course, the only reason we're assuming that's not is because we would have heard that already. You've got Penny talking about next season out there last night. So, again, this is all assuming that Penny is back. That's where it's got to start. Penny said he started to have these conversations with Ed. You wonder how much of that, you know, this, I guess this conversation he had in the past week was, look, man, y'all got to make a run this tournament because if you don't, we're going to have a talk. Like how in-depth it got. But either way, it's going to have to get to the point I'm talking about, Cobb. That's where it starts if Penny Hardaway is coming back to cut out the fat. Again, is some of that fat going to be guys he wants to keep? That's where you get – you made the point, and I think you're right. We talked about it on our show. Do you get a resentful Penny? Or do you get a Penny that understands right now, man, I've given – for what I produced this season, I've got to give Ed the control. You know, even for a proud guy like me that believes I can fix it, right now it's so far into the ground, been since 69, 70, whatever, since you lost this many games in a season, that you've pretty – you know, I think if he wants the job, he understands he's got to relinquish some of it. Question is going to be, you know, how personal does this get? How much does he have to cut?
When do you think he realized this team wasn't going to be fixable?
I don't know. Some point in the conference season. I mean, clearly Penny believed he could turn it around, I think, through the conference. I think we expected struggles in the non-con. And even through those, which we weren't holding them to the same expectation as is even previous seasons, because you're $4 to $5 million this year, not the same as it was last year. We've talked about the price change. Even through those struggles of non-con, I still believed, thought he had gotten, I mean, I call me naive, whatever else. There were a lot of us that this was a team that's still going to win the, you know, win the conference, that at least it would compete for a top two spot. And as we saw game after game, it was like they're coming unraveled. These guys aren't, you know, half of them aren't who we thought they were. My gosh. And so it was some, to answer your question, Jeffrey, it had to be some point, you know, through, you know, not putting together 4 or 5 game winning streaks in conference that maybe you know, hell, if you can lose at home to Tulane, I suppose you feel like you can lose to anybody. But Penny being that man of faith that he is, my guess is he always thought he could turn around. But somewhere in that conference season, I can't pinpoint the loss, Jeffrey. There are so many of them at this point, they all run together. But it's not until this thing breaks down there do I think that Penny said, you know what, this thing's a wash. So
I think for me,
I was halfway through, you have a certain point in mind.
I was thinking, because I still contended, like, I had no expectations for them in the non-conference. Like, I don't know if I thought it was going to be, like, I thought maybe they'd probably pick up another win or two. Like, they should have beaten Wake. You know, they had a chance to flip one of those other, you know, the Vandy game.
Vandy should have flipped, yeah. The Vandy played terrible that game. They should have, they went to OT then and should have won that one.
Josh come in here. It was the road trip to Oklahoma and Kansas. When I saw them play Tulsa and Wichita State, and then when you realized they don't look any different. Like, you know what I mean? Like, those just looked like, you know, I mean, they the final score in the Tulsa game was a blowout because of that weird, you know, 5-6 minutes that we saw where the game just completely flipped. But then the Wichita State game, they were never in it. That was when I realized, like, when you look around and you realize they're not better than this conference, I knew they had a problem then.
I think they were still 5-3. I'm looking at their KenPom now when they lost to Tulane at home. John asked me if that was the low point. After that loss and how poorly they had played against that Ron Hunter zone, I said, I don't know. This could get worse. And again, I brought that up with you guys because he looked at me, no way. This is, again, John's all about that, right? Almost after every loss, is this the lowest point? Is this the lowest point? And you could, the way they lost that game at home, after seemingly, I know it was Florida Atlantic, but you were telling yourself still 3 out of 4, and this is a Tulane team where you've kind of tamed Ron Hunter in terms of Penny lately against him until this season. I was telling myself at that point it was still salvageable, that you were still in a position, still top two. So I think for me it was a little bit later.
Maybe you're right. Maybe North.
After they got punked against Wichita State and that game against Tulsa, I think it was losing at home to Tulane is where. Because I even thought, I was like, they're probably going to lose the UAB the next week. And while they didn't, It came soon after in terms of that breakdown. It was the way they lost around 100 home for me that started to really question, oh, man, this might really fall through. And it did. And it did. So
maybe it was
putting it to a game. It was that one for me for sure.
Maybe it was also because the way that the league worked where, you know, it took a while for USF to kind of take control. The trip to North Texas with the Utah State game, and then they came back and then went to Tampa the next week. Like, that was all she wrote. But when you're right, because they'd kind of stabilized it, and you could do the math, and like, all right, maybe they don't win the league outright, but they just needed to get a top two seed, and they'd be fine. It was the North Texas game that you realized, like, they're not fixing this.
Yeah, I mean, and you can't really boil it down to one player underachieving or anything else.
Nah.
It was or just putting it on the players. Again, it was staff, it was players, and just an entirely, Penny's hoping for a mulligan here. The issue is real damage has been done. You're coming off, yes, your best season, but it was a season in which you only had 6,500 actual butts and seats on average down at FedEx Forum. And so, again, it's not like you're coming from a high point in attendance. You have a $1.2 million shortfall. And so the question will be, sure, Penny can get it restored to a point with a GM, the right coaching staff, to where you're competing in the American and winning it, but is making it back to the tournament as an 8 or a 9 seed as the American champ, because Lord knows that non-con schedule next year just as tough. Is that going to be enough to get butts back in seats, excitement again? Perhaps Memphis again is – you're baking in some losses since you know you're pushing ahead with Penny Hardaway. Again, knowing that football has to be the focus, but you cannot continue to hemorrhage money. That's why you had to move on from Tubby. And while it's not the same basketball front porch priority it was when you fired Tubby and paid him $10 million over the 6 years or whatever it was, you can't continue to let it, as my partner's phrased it, die on the vine. So, change has got to happen. It's got to happen quickly. And I'm assuming, again, we'll hear from Ed Scott soon.
Jason, any thoughts on this schedule for next season? It's kind of crazy. I feel like you don't normally get scheduling news before the current season has concluded. But from what I can tell, Memphis is going all out yet again on putting together a blockbuster slate.
They are. I mean, they don't have a choice. You're likely, and you'd know this better than me, going to lose Hodgson at South Florida. He's probably out of there after a year. I mean, based on what they've done, maybe not. But he's shown he's a heck of a coach. You've got folks talking about him. And so back to this point, maybe even a weaker league next year. Whether it's Penny or the next coach, because of your position, because of you're a member of the American, and particularly in basketball, that's something that the coaches are going to have to do. They're going to have to schedule tough. And it feels like you're losing Ole Miss, like a couple of them that have been important to you, where you've actually had 10,000-plus butts in seats, some of them obviously helping you. I think that was Ole Miss, Mississippi State maybe 2 seasons ago.
It was last year. Last year's season.
Last year. So some of those are coming off, and you're replacing them, I mean, with some clearly quality opponents. You're right, Cobb, the timing of them. It's because folks, basically that athletic department's indicated they want to start looking ahead. But here's the thing. It's like that is a gauntlet next year. And for a team that doesn't have much in terms of guys that you want back, it's clearly going to have a bunch of new guys. And so in many ways, while it might not be – it won't be 15 new ones, you'll be in that same boat of breaking in a new team. And against that kind of schedule, what you hope for is that, you can sort of sustain, get through it, and still have enough of a team left, one that's close enough still, that has enough chemistry built up, that can do what it's supposed to do in conference. But that can go one of two ways. I mean, it could get – it could really test them and get them – put them at a point where we saw – last season, hey, man, this team, wow, 10-3, at fourth toughest schedule in the nation. I mean, that's hard to do and hard to imagine happening again. Or it could backfire, depending upon who you bring in here. It's why it's so key that when they're digging into these players, Cobb, if you've got guys in the past that have quit their previous teams, Hassan Abdul-Hakim, you got to go deeper on what could happen in terms of for you, because that's what's so key. I mean, when you hit adversity, and they're likely going to do it next year in this non-con with that schedule, do you have a team of guys that's going to stay together? Some of that is retention, so guys know your program and knows what happens through that time, but other parts of that is just digging deeper in terms of your search on these guys and trying to find more winners than you certainly did this season.
Jason, we really appreciate it, buddy.
Y'all take care.
That's Jason Smith of the Jason, or beg your pardon, the J&J Show. Start your day with J&J right here on 92.9 from 9 until noon. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's get into, we need to get into the coaching carousel for Cobb, because Cobb's going to fill us all in. Right now, it does feel like it could be kind of, there's enough jobs open, but it doesn't feel like, I don't know, tame would be maybe the right word. But also, we got to discuss, boys, do we have hope when we keep opening Tankathon each and every day? Because the New Orleans Pelicans are doing great work, and we got another must-lose tonight down at FedEx Forum. We'll talk about it when we come back right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.